Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts today are my fellow actors, Garrett Wong and Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, of course, Terry Farrell.
For the complete version of this podcast with all the bonus segments, check out patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and sign up to become a patron today.
We're here. Hello, everyone.
We're here.
Part two. It's
season three. We survived part two.
Yeah.
See, now that's a differing opinion from what I have. You just said survive, which means I feel like it was an ordeal for you, Terry.
A little.
Okay.
Wow. Good. Let it all out.
A little.
Yeah. We can't wait to hear it.
I know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there's stuff I know.
Oh.
That's going to happen later.
That made it confusing for me and not in a great way.
Yes.
Wait a minute. This doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't wait till we get to ratings in the bonus.
Same.
Yeah. Someone's going to see what I saw.
Okay. I believe it. I believe you 1,000%.
Nitpick department's going to go, huh?
I wonder if this conversation today is going to lower my rating on this episode.
No, Robbie.
I can't do it. I'm not going to do it.
Don't do it. This may be the highest rating I've ever rated anything.
Influencing you.
And it may be the lowest that Terry's ever
rated. I like the episode. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Do you guys notice anything about me that's different today?
You're wearing white?
Yes.
No.
White on white, Raiders.
It's all white. I chose this ensemble because this episode is like a rebirth for me. This is like,
now it's on.
It is on. Like, I feel like they talk about all Star Trek having, it takes a season or two to get their feet underneath them. This is the point. The feet are underneath this. It's going. So.
Wow. Yeah,
I love
it. So you're celebrating
episode.
With all white.
I'm celebrating with the all white look. So.
Wow.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it too.
Well, now that you're reborn.
Yes. Now that you're reborn, let's talk about when these people were born on their birthday.
Yes. What a great segue.
What a perfect. Yeah.
I jumped the gun.
our first birthday is Mark Hamilton on November 18th. Happy birthday, Mark.
Happy birthday, Mark. Day before my birthday.
I was frozen solid right there because I thought you said Mark Hamill. I go, Mark Hamill is one of our...
Ton.
Okay, no.
Yeah.
He's equally impressed with you, Mark.
Happy birthday, Mark Hamilton.
Normandy has a birthday on November 20th, the day after my birthday. Happy birthday, Normandy.
Happy birthday, Normandy.
Happy birthday to Normandy in Portugal.
Wow.
She's in Lisbon.
Mm-hmm.
She's in Lisbon.
Yes.
Let's go visit her. That sounds exciting.
I think
we should all need an adventure.
Yeah. Agreed. Next up, we have Steve Lugo. Steve, happy birthday to you, November 23rd.
Happy birthday, Steve.
Happy birthday, Steve, on November 23rd. And also on November 23rd, our last birthday today is for Chris Garris. Another November 23rd. Happy birthday, Chris.
Happy birthday, Chris.
Happy birthday, Chris. I also want to say a happy birthday to my stepdaughter, Keely, November 12th. So,
happy birthday,
Keely. Happy birthday, Keely.
3 days after you, Robbie. And how many days before Terry then?
Is she sweet 16?
Yes.
This year?
Yes.
Oh.
See, Auntie's paying attention.
You are paying attention.
I am. That's a big deal.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, it's time for our poetry synopsis, and that would mean Robbie's limerick, and I'm not sure, did you have another one?
I have
one
a poem. It doesn't rhyme, and it's kind of
okay.
Long.
That's all right.
That's all right. It can be modern.
I've been working on rewriting it, and my head started to break, so I stopped.
Well, then you can give us a partial poem.
You can just wrap it. Wrap it.
I could just wrap it.
Improv wrap it.
Just sing it country style, please. Just a little country. Gosh, I mean, everyone needs a little country in their life.
Okay, all right, limerick
Robbie,
time.
Here limerick we go. Time. Let's go.
Here we go. The Search Part 2. Odo learns about his changeling link. Sisko's love of Starfleet begins to shrink. Odo gets past a door. For now, they avoid war. Odo learns, home depends on how you think.
Ooh, doggy.
Mm-hmm. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, I think you hit that out of the park, sir.
That was Thank you.
Yeah, very much so.
That was like a Shohei Ohtani home run. You just knocked it out there. Okay.
Thank you.
Ah, the desires and the longing pulling us, drawing us in. To belong with a natural, innate connection to beings like us. This hope of a magical connection drives us to quench our thirst, to put out the torturing rumination to the existential crisis. Where do I belong? Why am I here? Who am I in the universe? Only to discover after the awakening, I created my family. I was already home. Safe and sound.
Oh,
that's great. I like that.
Are you sure?
Yeah,
yes, it's moving. That was very moving.
What's the very first line? It says desire. What is the very beginning of it?
The desire and the longing pulling us, drawing us in.
You began with the there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That drew me in immediately.
Exactly.
And
really?
Voice, yeah, yes. And also with your voice. Yes, your voice.
With my voice.
Yeah, it went, the desires. So like immediately we dove into that with you.
Oh, yay.
Smart choice. I love it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah.
You're very love kind. It. Thank
okay.
you, guys.
You're
How's
welcome.
Your haiku, Garrett?
Not so good, but
ooh,
you know,
I cannot
it is what it is.
Let's hear it. I'm sure it's
okay.
great.
All right. Here we go. In my haiku for The Search, Part 2, Odo's first smile. Dream life, Sisko the rebel, station family.
Oh, I like the haiku because it's abstract.
It's so abstract.
Minimalist.
Yeah, it is. And I said I turned up the first line because I wasn't sure if we've seen him smile before this point, because this was
I don't think we have.
I've never seen him happy.
There were two more lines. Huh? I see now what that means.
Oh. Yeah, my alternate middle line was, I said, Odo's first smile, dream life where Sisko rebels. Okay, that was my alternate middle line. And first time it was dream life, Sisko the rebel. So I don't know which one you guys like better.
I like that one.
I do too.
Dream life, Sisko the rebel?
Dream life, yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of dream life where Sisko rebels, not so much. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So
see, that's where I wished I had more time to edit mine.
Yeah.
It was like, am I over explaining?
Yeah, No, it was great.
But I do feel like this is the first time that he smiles, because every other time we see him, he's pretty grumpy or he's giving Quark a bad time, right?
Is it Terry? That's it. Oh my God. How do you do that?
I'm sorry. For those of you who are just listening to the podcast and not be able to see, if you subscribe at the Lieutenant tier, you can see Terry's impersonation of the Odo smile, which she knocked it out of the park. It was another Ohtani home run right there.
I don't know how you did that.
Goodness.
I don't know. But the last ad.
I can't even do it.
I know.
I'm trying. You try it, Robbie.
I'm trying.
Your face is too furry, Robbie. You're like a teddy bear.
Once again, Salome Jens as the main female changeling. Andrew Robinson as Garrick, of course. Martha Hackett as Tyrule. Kenneth Marshall as Michael Eddington, Natalia Nagulich as Lena Nechayev, and William Frankfather as male changeling, his first and only appearance in Star Trek. And that's a really interesting last name. I kept thinking it was Frankfurter, but it's not. It's Frankfather. And also Dennis Christopher as Borath. When we were watching this, when he first introduced himself, Megan was like, Borat? I go, not Borat. And immediately I started imagining that actor in the Borat green one-piece swimsuit. Dennis Christopher wearing a green one-piece. He also appeared in the Star Trek Enterprise episode Detained. That's Dennis's Star Trek exposure.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Dennis Christopher, I love that actor. He was in a film called Breaking Away.
Oh, one of your favorite films, Robbie.
One of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah.
that I must have seen in the summer of 1980 or whatever summer that was. I must have seen it a dozen times in the movie theaters.
It's incredible. You love that film.
I loved it. I would go to like the 50-cent matinees or the dollar matinees, Breaking Away.
A story by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolfe.
I've heard of them.
Yes.
They're fabulous.
Yeah, I hear they're pretty good.
They're pretty good.
I hear they know how to write a line or two. Now we have Ira Stephen Baer, who wrote the teleplay. So story by Ira and Robert, and teleplay is by just Ira alone. And directed by none other than Mr. Jonathan Frakes. This is his very, very first episode of Deep Space Nine that he directed right here.
Well, he's been amazing. On TNG, which was running, so he couldn't direct anything else until TNG went off the air. So that makes sense.
Right.
But he did direct. Didn't he direct TNG as well, though? He did.
Yeah.
Begin with.
Yeah.
I've hardly ever had anything to do anytime he's directed. This is probably the time I had the most. And I've not been in this episode very much. But
wow.
He's so much fun. He's down to earth. Yeah. He's straightforward.
Yep.
If he doesn't like something, I remember him saying, like, does anybody else smell that? Let's go again.
Yes. He's so fun.
You know, like, you can do better than that. You can do better than that. Just, I love how just straightforward, no nonsense, but a sense of humor. No big deal. Everybody makes mistakes, and that's why we have another take. There's just like such a great freeing atmosphere when you have a director that's that casual about it. And if he has something important to tell you, he's going to pull you aside and have that conversation. So, you know, you're not embarrassed, or, you know, that it's private between him and the other actor. And I just really respect the hell out of him. And he's
agreed.
A genuine gentleman. He's a mensch. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say great I'm family. Also, yes, I'm also wearing white to commemorate the two other births because of this episode. Frakes directing this episode enabled it for him to be hired as the director of First Contact. So it's a birth of his directing a feature film. Yes. And because of this episode and him being selected to direct First Contact, he then had to back out of Voyager Sacred Ground, which gave birth to Robbie McNeil's directing career. So this is the birth episode.
Wow, what an interesting
look at that.
Layers of kismet going on here.
Yeah, it's like the pebble you drop into the pond and all the waves going out, how they affect everything. And look at this.
Mm-hmm. The butterfly.
Or the butterfly. Yes, the butterfly effect.
Yeah, we start this episode on the planet surface, back where we left off. Odo's about to meet his people. You know, the people like him, asks a ton of questions. Kira even says, I love when she's like, this isn't a police investigation, Odo. Like, stop.
I know.
He was like asking them in his sort of angry, sharp way. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't being like, oh, can I find open and curious? No.
No.
He's so used to that. That's why.
He's interrogating them.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
You're my people. Who says?
Yeah. Prove it to me.
and he learns a little bit about the link because she holds out her hand at one point. So Odo takes her hands and then their hands and their arms sort of blend in together and kind of combine, I guess. So he's overwhelmed. Yeah. Did you see his reaction? He's like, he was really
stunned.
It's also interesting.
Looking up at the sky.
Yeah.
He was definitely in another zone. But it's interesting that the other male changeling behind the female changeling says, what are you doing? And he's like, it's not time. He isn't ready. So I don't know what that refers to, but there's obviously something going on in the story there that the writers know about. But she replies.
And he could simply be worried about him being overwhelmed by the onslaught of information that's going to come at him.
Yeah. Okay.
It's also a hint that, spoiler alert, but we're going to find out who these changelings are by the end of this.
Yes.
Right.
And
very good point.
There's some stuff that the changelings know that they maybe don't want Odo to know about yet.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So maybe that's what that reference is.
I think you're
right. Well, the good news is he was so overwhelmed he didn't pick up on all the other little
he didn't see all the other
important
the little details like
fireworks.
We go to a like a shuttle pod, I guess it's an escape pod or something. that Sisko, after this, Sisko and Bashir are in this escape pod kind of thing.
An escape pod that looks just like a regular shuttle, though, inside.
But
right?
It doesn't look like one of our runabouts. So this is what I was talking about when we first said good morning to each other. That made me go, mm-mm.
Something's
that's the wrong
back.
This is not ours. Where are we?
Right.
Well, the logic would be that they escaped the Defiant, right? In some kind of escape pod?
Escape pod or a shuttle.
That's true. That's true. So maybe it's an escape pod I've never seen before.
Well, you guys haven't shown an escape pod before.
No.
And you definitely haven't even shown a shuttle. Not even a shuttle. You guys only have runabouts.
I'm just used to shuttlecraft.
Right?
I don't know what this one was, but it wasn't one I recognized. And that made my little hairs go,
something's
hold
off.
On. Something's off.
Well, they're in some mystery pod thing. The systems are failing. This is not good for them. And suddenly it gets like a bump or something. They wonder, is it a tractor beam? Are we being tractored? But the hatch opens and there's Dax and Miles. They say, and they're all smiles.
Like, yeah, and what the actual F?
Yes.
Because that's how we look pristine. We look great. We look happy.
Yes. It made no sense to me.
Well, also, it makes no sense because I thought that Sisko and Bashir were in space. You know what I'm saying? They were traveling, right? I mean, it makes it. So that makes sense.
They haven't gone through the wormhole yet. They're still on the gamma quadrant side.
If you open up the hatch, then they're going to be sucked into space. But it looks like when the hatch is open, you're already in.
Well, you could make the assumption that there's an airlock attached to
the. So they just connected with you guys.
Then, right? They connected. Yeah.
That I got when they heard the
thump.
The thump. That I understood.
And just the way
but
everyone
we're
is
not like, oh my God, are you guys okay?
No.
Just like, hey.
Yeah. But the hey part honestly was so relaxed. I thought, oh, this is them shooting a scene of them shooting a scene. This is like showing how the sausage is made of the actors are going to like visiting and they're like, hey, what's up guys? Like that. Well, I thought.
Listen to that.
Felt very lighthearted.
Yes.
Yeah.
The wrong tone.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to match where we left off with them on the Defiant with all hell breaking loose.
Right.
Yeah.
So, Terry, so for you, you see the interior of this vessel and you're like, nope, that's not right. Then it opens up and you guys are like, hey, what's up? Like, just like nothing's gone on, right?
Yeah,
almost so casual.
Like, Benjamin,
that you're confused.
I can't believe you're safe. I mean, it's the wrong dialogue. Yeah, it's the wrong vibe. Even if we have been saved at Deep Space Nine and everything's cherry pie.
Yeah.
It just seems like we would be, this is not how our characters would normally react to seeing each other when we don't know if you're okay or not.
Right. But as as an audience member watching this for the first time, I honestly, because the first episode, there was so much battling and so much violence and aggression happening in that scene and smoke and everything. This was like it was like I had a chance to breathe and I didn't question it. They were safe. I was like, okay, they're smiling. They're happy.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm not going to question it. So I think that transition from the prior episode to this one didn't immediately make me think something's going on here. You know,
I think you need to work on being a little more skeptical.
Okay.
Yes. At the end, O'Brien and Dax say to them, you know, we're going to take you back to DS9. That's our orders. And Benjamin, you're not going to believe the great things happening. So it was very weird.
Yeah. Twilight Zone.
We just left them in a giant battle. Yeah. Everyone's dying. And now they're super happy and things are great.
Right. And things are great. Yeah. 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 I just don't see big decisions being made without the man who's still a commander, not a captain, can't shave his head, is going to be super excited about big changes happening without his input.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know. Agreed. Call me crazy, but I've known Sisko longer than y'all.
Well, yes,
I am. I believe you. We go back to the planet surface with Odo and Kira. There's plants. There's these kind of glowing like lamps, I guess.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is very pretty.
Super
it's very
pretty.
Yeah.
My feeling was when I saw this planet surface that maybe James Cameron was watching this episode when he filmed Avatar, and that whole
planet. It did feel very Avatar.
Didn't it?
Yeah. And it was way before Avatar.
Way before. So it's very possible James Cameron was watching this episode and said, this is going to be my planet surface.
Yeah. I don't know that's true. I love the idea of him watching us, though.
That would be nice.
I do, too.
Kira tells Odo, you know, awesome, you're home, Odo, but this isn't my home, and they don't trust me. And that's when the female changeling arrives, tells them they can't send any message, that they might be discovered. Because the changelings, the story that they've told is that, you know, they were not treated well and they had to hide. And so the story they're telling is like, don't send any messages. We don't want to be found again because we'll be abused or something, you know, taken over.
Right. So.
Yeah, it's interesting because
that didn't feel hinky to me. That felt like, like their solitude.
I'd buy that too.
But the way she showed up was, Kira says, I'm the one they don't trust, not you. And then the female changeling is like, boom. Oh, perceptive major. So I feel like she was a mushroom or a rock or something there.
Yeah, that's kind of, ooh, I didn't think of that.
It's a little creepy. It's like, wow, you were there.
Yeah,
the
she's just magically there.
You're just there. Yeah. But I do like how she refers to humans as solids.
I do
and
too.
And also, she says, our name... for monoforms like yourself. So that's another name for a solid.
Never
monoforms.
Heard that before.
Yeah. They can only have one form. It's I don't know. Is it offensive to call someone a monoform?
That sounds like a description.
Yeah. So probably, yeah. And solids, also just a description then. Yeah. Solids.
I think so.
Yeah. But she said changelings was offensive and they owned it.
And then they owned
the word. So there
they
is.
They made it theirs.
Yes. Yes.
Because that's it was a racial slur.
It was. Yes.
Yes. I think that was kind of great, actually, that she described that, because we had that episode way back when the holograph village. And he found out that they thought changelings were just myths and fairy tales. Right?
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So kind
so
of
it
like
connects
witches.
Back to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why she's saying you can't send messages, is they're trying to stay isolated.
They want to stay safe and isolated. Yeah.
We value that our isolation.
Yeah. Privacy. It made sense to me that they wanted to stay safe and isolated. Mm-hmm. So don't send any messages.
And I love her portrayal of this character.
Yeah, I do too.
Because
although her
I
makeup was
safe.
Not good.
No, and it changed colors and there was
changed
puckering. And
yeah, her makeup
was
not.
Yeah, I didn't like that the tone in her skin changed a lot. There's one scene towards the end where it was like brown makeup. What the heck happened?
Yeah.
And she was in the previous shot in another location and it wasn't that color. And then suddenly it's a different color.
Yeah.
A different
like
shot
radically
on a different day.
Different.
Yes.
Well, clearly she did not have
the
same makeup
wrong
artist.
Skin tone.
Odo had a different makeup artist than whoever she had. Otherwise it would have been better.
Must have been running out of time. I just don't see how that, because there's no way that would have been like, yeah, let's film this.
Yeah. You're right.
Where they filmed it first and they went, ooh.
Yeah.
Oops.
That doesn't look good. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could have been that.
The female changeling does ask Odo if he's made good use of the Arboretum. Mm-hmm. And Odo says, oh, in what way? And she says, by assuming the various shapes surrounding you. Odo's completely confused. He doesn't know why he would want to do that. And she's like, well, this is how you get to know what something is, to know it.
Made me think of Merlin.
Oh, yes.
Turning
yeah.
King Arthur into a fish or into a bird. It's like,
Yes. And the female changeling says, well, living among the solids has damaged you far worse than I realized. It's left you ignorant of the gifts you possess. So basically she's telling him, you've got to reach inside. You have the potential to really experience what it's like to be everything around you, which is, I think that's amazing to be
and
able to do
that. And how about bigger, to be you?
Yes.
You are learning how to experience how to be you. And I am trying to hold your hand and show you how to play with that so that you can experience your potential.
She hands him a rock and he's very pensive. That scene.
Yes.
About that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been excited about the rock.
Yeah, the rock would have.
It looked like a crystal to me, though.
Okay, the crystal.
Which I thought,
it
I thought
did
that
have
was
a little,
cool.
A tiny bit of shimmer.
Yeah. I liked it.
The crystalline rock. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Odo does say at the end, with his rock crystal or whatever, he says to Kira, you know, I need some privacy. I'd like to be alone.
I like how he asks for privacy.
Yes.
He asks for it in a very kind of, it's like a little painful to ask for it, but he's respecting himself and he doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. He's very consistent about this when he asks for time to himself.
Yep.
I like that.
Well, Kira says she's going to go try to send a message like she did when she was in the resistance, the Bajoran resistance. She can camouflage this message so it won't be able to be read. So the thing the female said, like, don't send any messages. She's like, I'm going to send a message, but it's going to be fine because I'm going to hide it. No one can intercept it.
I love that.
Yeah.
And all I thought of was, okay, while you're doing that, every piece of foliage around you could be a changeling.
listening to you.
Gosh, that would make me worried about having to go pee in the bushes.
Yes, because, well,
you start
peeing on a changeling.
But you're warned. But if you're hiding as a philodendron,
you may get urine on you. That's all there is to it. So.
Oh, boy.
Well, you don't mean to pick a leaf off either to use it as...
No. Well, we go to the corridor next where Sisko's arriving back at DS9. Admiral Nechayev. She's there, says his mission was a success. The founders have come to the Alpha Quadrant. They've agreed to a treaty, and Dax and O'Brien were handed over to the founders. They convinced them that they wanted peace, that Starfleet wanted peace. So it does sort of answer the question of what happened on the Defiant, because here the admiral saying they were captured, they were handed over to the founders, but then they did their part and said, we're gonna fight you. Let's have a peace.
That helped me a lot.
Yeah.
I still felt like
something was off. Yeah.
Yeah. A little hinky.
Yeah. The admiral also tells Sisko one of the founders wants to see you as soon as possible, as soon as you return.
Right.
Which seemed interesting.
Yeah, but the Ford isn't the founders.
Correct.
So
but that's
when
because...
he walks in the door and he sees, what's his name?
Borath.
Yeah. So then Sisko goes into his quarters, right? Is that where Borath is waiting?
Yep.
Borath's quarters, I think.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Yes, Borath's guest quarters.
Yeah. Don't let somebody in my...
Don't let them in my quarters.
And right when Sisko walks in the door and we see Borath, I'm like, that's not a founder.
Correct.
But of course, I know that.
You know that.
But the audience, we don't know that. So they're, again, sending us on that wild goose chase. That's the thing.
This tracked for me.
It tracked perfectly for me. So,
and it didn't track for me because I know.
Because you already know
all the answers. It's not the founders. Yeah. Okay. I thought I was given the information so that, like, isn't everybody going, what the heck is going on?
No, not yet.
So this is why my brain was breaking.
Clearly. But of all of us students here, you're the student with all the test answers. You already have the answers.
Yes,
I know. Exactly. Only it was 30 years ago, so it's hard to remember.
I understand 1,000%. Okay. So
yeah, at this point,
I'd be just like you too. I'd be like, what? I already know this is the right thing. So
yeah. So what's going on?
They know the Vorta are bossing around the Jem'Hadar in some way.
Right.
So they could be the founders. They think, Molly Hagen did the magical disappearance on the.
Had a creepy vibe. Didn't Borath had a creepy, snotty, entitled vibe?
In a way.
Yeah. Yes. Like she did too. Like, so clearly that race, or at least the ones we've been introduced to, are a bit creepy.
They're great for Halloween. But other than that,
Okay. And after the way she said goodbye the last time we saw her two shows ago.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been excited to see her again.
No, because she said you have no idea what's about to happen to you.
Yeah, you have no idea what has begun.
Can't wait till we meet again.
What has begun? Yeah. And then she
it was a threat.
She tapped her wrist and disappeared.
Well, Borath is creepy in here, but he's basically saying the Dominion was just trying to protect itself. That's why Eris couldn't reveal who she was before.
Right.
That felt like it made sense.
Yeah.
And did you notice he walks around him and then gets right up to his nose?
Borath
walks around Sisko and then gets right up into like close face. Talking. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was
much shorter than Sisko.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. But he does say this treaty is going to be really good for everybody, for both sides. but that close talking felt very threatening to me. So yeah. I didn't feel like this is going to be good.
I didn't believe him. No.
We go to the promenade next on the upper level. Garrick is there welcoming Bashir.
Yeah.
He missed him. He says, I missed you. Oh, what a cute couple.
Yeah. And what was fun too, that end of the promenade,
yeah,
we don't usually see. So to see it walled up and made part of the normal set, I thought looked super cool. That was for me.
Cool.
It was cool. Yeah.
I have trouble like figuring out the geography. It's a little disorienting sometimes on the promenade, but that's cool.
Yeah. That was at the back of the stage facing that alleyway.
Got it.
At Paramount. Yeah.
Yep.
Let me read this to both of you. Mm-hmm. In the scene where Bashir is intercepted by Garrick upon arriving back at the station, in the background, the end of the set can be seen as the walkway and its railing end abruptly. In addition, the whole promenade background seems to be sloping down. This is only partially concealed by the Jem'Hadar standing in front. So there's some things that you can catch. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you look very closely. So
I like it because I imagine that that's where like where all the rooms start, where all the
quarters and
quarters
like
start.
That.
Yeah. Sorry. My pause was trying to like, what did they call them? They didn't call them rooms. Where's my room?
Their bedrooms.
My bedroom.
My quarters. I want to know where all my quarters are. I got a coin link I got to go visit.
Well, these guys are walking and talking in that new part of the promenade that Terry's excited to see.
Yeah.
Bashir seems very happy about this treaty. Garrick is not so happy. He's kind of worried. Tarul arrives. Martha Hackett arrives. And she is really angry. She says the Romulans were left out of these negotiations. And that's going to mean war.
Yeah. Mm.
Storms off. And Garrick's like, I told you so.
Yeah.
This is not good.
She had a bandage. You see that? She had a bandage on her hand because she was fighting to get into that meeting. And the guards kicked her out, basically. So she had to go to sick bay. So she had a bandage hand.
Poor Tarul. Yes. Poor Martha.
Yeah.
Poor Romulans.
They gave their
cloaking device to us.
I know.
And now they're getting kicked out. It doesn't seem fair.
There was trust there.
Yep.
And something's afoot. And I like how, we're going to find out, but I like how Bashir follows up with Sisko. This is good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next scene is in the shuttlecraft on the planet where Kira and Odo are. Kira's trying to send this message with the Bajoran camouflage on it or whatever. Mm-hmm. She's trying to send out the message, but there's interference from an unknown power source below ground.
Yeah.
Computer can't penetrate it, doesn't know what it is. It's a polymetallic substance surrounding something.
An unknown polymetallic substance.
Yes. Mm. Very, very suspicious, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. Well, Odo arrives. He's very frustrated in this scene because he's been every rock and tree and flower in the garden. He doesn't get it. And he just wants to go to his bucket.
He's a guy. He's a guy's guy.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I've tried to be sensitive and have feelings and it's not working. Just give me my bucket.
Screw it. I'm not into it.
No.
Give me my bucket.
We got back to the commander's office at DS9. The admiral comes to see Sisko. He defends the Romulans from being excluded from these peace talks. And the admiral says, well, the founders specifically asked that the Romulans not be included. Seems strange to me.
It's weird. Yeah.
And this admiral seems to be on the founders' side of this and not the Starfleet side of this.
Yeah. Which is another weird tell.
But we also did not enjoy her the first time she came to visit him. At Deep Space Nine. Do you remember that? She just has this kind of, doesn't really get the gravity
of
a situation.
She seems to be sort of smiling and just like completely dismissing anything that he says.
Yeah. But full of power in the way that sort of like, well, it's too bad you have your problems because we've already figured it out and I don't really need your input. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Exactly.
I don't like her.
Yeah, she's almost Stepford Wivey in a way.
Sisko tries to stand up for the Romulans a little bit in this scene. But when the Admiral says something like, well, after this treaty is signed with the Dominion, the Romulans won't stand a chance. Which seems a little very un-Starfleet.
Yeah.
We go back to the planet surface after our lovely scene with our admiral. We go back to the planet. Odo's learning a lot from the female changeling. This is where we learn about the name changeling was an insult, but they owned it, made it their own.
What's her name? Why do they just keep calling her female? Doesn't Salome Jens's character have a name other than female?
Do you have the actual script, Robbie?
I know that she comes back, this character, female
but
changeling.
In this episode, we don't find out her name.
No.
Isn't that bizarre?
No.
I think that's bizarre.
But what we do find out is that... Go ahead, Robbie. What do you think?
I was going to say, I think that we never finding out... that the fact that we never find out a name in this episode, to me, made it feel like the changelings are one, that they don't have individual names.
Right.
Oh.
That they're all one.
They're all part of the Great Link. They're all one, right? So...
Yeah, she didn't say his name when she met him or saw him.
Mm-mm. She never
said. She said,
anything.
"Welcome home."
We made
guys.
Yeah, we know she's in 9 episodes or something.
This whole Great Link thing, what we're talking about,
yes,
again,
yes.
James Cameron in Avatar, it's Iwa, which is the Great Link of all the people. They're all one with Iwa.
Right.
So there's another great. So I really feel
like our higher consciousness.
Yes.
Great Link.
There's more.
These are running themes, though, for spiritually evolved people that have.
Yeah.
Can look at things with a great distance.
Yes.
To see the inner workings of everything.
I
you
agree.
Know what I mean? But I love that you're saying that.
I'm just saying that James Cameron made this is another point to where my argument that James Cameron watched this episode. And the female, she talks about how the Great Link, they were the changelings many years ago. They roamed the stars searching out other races to add to their knowledge. So they were pretty much the Federation. They were Starfleet. They were exploring. Yeah. They're identical, basically. But now she talks about how when they were like that, they were met with a lot of suspicion and hatred, violence, because they didn't understand the alien races were like, what are these changelings? Why can they change from one shape to another?
They didn't trust them.
They didn't trust them. And something happened and they were persecuted.
There this could be is a whole the scene where she tells about this is why we came here and to stay isolated. We don't want anybody to come here.
Yeah.
And this is what you get for, a couple of pranks. Then people don't trust you anymore. You pop up and you think you're popping up from behind a bush, but they are the bush.
That's what happens.
That would be creepy.
Well, she also mentions in this scene how they sent out, I think, 100 changeling infants or something.
Yeah.
Right. That Odo was one of those sent out. They were supposed to learn about the universe and come back. One day, that they would have this urge, this draw to go in their genetic makeup, they'd have this urge to go back. And he's the first one that has returned
of the 100,
of the 100 they sent out.
And he came back early,
yes,
came back
correct.
Early,
300 years, right?
300 years early,
doesn't expect him for another 300 years. I like how he says, "How long was I gone?" She goes, A long time, thinking, so, oh my gosh.
Does that
like
mean
700 years?
Yeah,
correct. But does that mean the founders are immortal? Is that what your take, everybody, on this? That they don't
maybe
they
not
never
immortal,
die?
But very they live a long time, and
maybe
then they
thousands of years.
Yeah.
But immortal is sort of like
that almost feels godlike.
It's too much.
Too far.
Okay, because like the elves in.
With Santa Claus?
The Hobbit.
Yes.
No. In The Hobbit. The elves.
Yes.
They live for a really, really, really long time.
Thousands
but they
of
can
years?
Be killed. They can be killed.
They can be killed. Mm. That's right.
But there's something about their mortality. I don't know yet.
Okay.
But there's something that I think is magical about it. Not a big surprise.
Magic is part of it.
Sorry. Well, wrong.
Wrong show. Okay.
Similar, but, but they live a long time. And Odo, now we know Odo's going to live a long time.
We're only going to talk about The Hobbit from now on. We're not going to even talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We don't need this. Okay, just kidding. So Odo says, it's different than I imagined it would be. Mm-hmm. And then she says, whatever you imagined, I promise it will be better. This is when they have that visual effect of them melting into each other.
Yeah.
I thought they were going to kiss. That's what I thought was going to happen. Did you guys see that weirdness? And then when they melted, they did sort of their melted forms kissed in a way.
Yeah.
Embraced.
Melted together for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I love that I think that was like the commercial break or something. And yes, when we come back,
clearly
come back from our old fashioned commercial break, Kira walks into the garden and she starts talking to all the plants. She's like,
oh, that Odo, was so good.
Odo, is that you? Are you a rock? Odo. She had a whole scene basically where she wanders around
talking to everything.
Yes, it was very funny.
But
didn't Frake start tight? I think the shot started tight on her leaning down. And then it just kept pulling back and back and back until
You see the whole set.
She's experimenting, talking at different things. Yeah.
But for me, I felt like I was watching a stage play because at that point, she's going through the monologue. You see the whole set. And at the very end, she crosses, you know, in the foreground, like she's crossing off the set. To me, it was very much like a theater experience. That
it
one
was
scene
one
right
shot.
Here.
It was her by herself talking to every plant and flower. And then she says, I'm going to go try to find the source of this interference. She's kind of sad at the end of this too. Like it felt a little bittersweet. Like, I'm glad you're here. I hope you're having fun being all these plants.
Yeah. But I'm not really a part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not including me on the journey of you exploring or just even in some way of sharing it.
Right. Yeah. But we've also established in the prior episodes, the closeness between these two characters.
Oh, they're starting. They're a couple. Right? For sure.
Odo is in love with Kira. So Kira definitely feels something from him. So this
in
is
my
very
mind,
bittersweet.
Already a couple.
Yeah. I didn't think that we were definitely getting into that yet, but I don't remember that when we were doing it.
Okay.
I just remember
they're close friends and that even that he's a little jealous. I've felt that way when I've been tight with, like, you know, when you're, especially when you're younger and you have a lot of platonic relationships and you're younger and it's like it's not that necessarily you wanted your friend to become your romantic partner, but that kind of romance of your friendship is done.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
Or like when he was dealing with Beryl.
She's still dating him at this point, technically, as far as we know.
But so you can kind of like feel that kind of,
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you knew you were like really meant to be partners with that person.
Right.
You just missed that little time of it being just about the two of you.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
And this, he's finding out a new thing, but it really, I get that this is all about him and I love that they're together. I just feel like he's leaving her out a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just feels like there could be an
acknowledgement.
He's
definitely
that
in his own bubble. He's discovered this thing and he's just going to, he's forgotten about Starfleet, about DS9, about anything else.
Anything else. He's, is it myopic?
Yes.
When you're singularly focused, he's very much so right now.
But he's redeemed at the end, so it's all good.
Right? Oh, we're talking
at the very
about
end.
This
yeah,
moment.
Very,
but
at
this moment,
definitely. Mm-hmm.
She's all by herself. She feels alone and kind of, you know, sad, but happy for him, but sad.
Yeah,
we go down
to
this,
figure out how to get back.
Yeah, go down inside the cavern. She's got her tricorder, leads her to some kind of metal door. And she's like, why would a shapeshifter need a door? It's very suspicious. Now, this part got me confused because she asked the computer on her com badge.
Yeah.
Is it connected to the shuttle? Is that how that works?
Yeah.
She's calling back to the computer.
That's what I thought.
That makes sense.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, our show must have been more advanced than yours.
Much more advanced. Yes.
I just have to tease you a little bit.
I know. Absolutely. You do.
So Kira asked the computer what it is. Computer says, I can't read through this metal. Unable to penetrate the metal due to some kind of interference.
Yeah.
Very suspicious. We go back
weird.
To, it's weird.
Robbie, the holiday season is upon us.
I love the holidays. I'm so excited.
I'm excited as well. And I'm also excited that I am not going to have to go out and purchase certain gifts because I've decided that certain people in my life are going to get the Rosetta Stone Language Learning Program as their Christmas gift.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great.
Well, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language that you want to learn.
Yeah, they've been around for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages they offer.
In fact, I think I'm going to challenge myself. This holiday season, I am going to learn a new language. I'm going to give Japanese a shot.
Oh, that's great. Well, it's fast language acquisition on Rosetta Stone because it immerses you in so many ways. And it's got speech recognition built right in with true accent feature.
And it's also convenient. Flexible learning anytime, anywhere. Learn on the go with the mobile app or at your desktop or anywhere practically on your schedule. What an amazing value, lifetime membership to all 25 languages.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a short time, the Delta Flyers listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership holiday special. This offer will not last long.
Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your holiday offer at rosettastone.com/today today for yourself or as a gift that keeps giving. Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things.
Garrett, I actually have been shopping at Uncommon Goods for years.
Really?
Yes, and I have this favorite piece. It's a bowl with half a bowl attached to it. It's all one piece, solid construction. I've had it over 10 years. I used to put like vegetables on one side and ranch dip on the other for Max when he was little. And now I use it for my chips and dip and for pistachios and shells. It's just remarkable. And it's been the best gift I've ever given.
Well, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. So shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high in quality, unique, and often handmade. They even have gifts you can personalize.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from book lovers to diehard sports fans.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date.
To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/TDF.
That's uncommongoods.com/TDF for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer.
Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Yes, we are.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We go back to Quark's. Quark's delivering drinks on the house to Bashir. Is it to O'Brien?
I
Bashir?
Was shocked. Yeah. Yes.
On the house,
you guys. I know.
You have to know something about the house.
Any of this whole thing,
yes.
Since we got back, doesn't make sense. It would be that.
Exactly. Yes.
No way.
The writers keep drinks throwing stuff house. At us. And now they throw the biggest one. A nice Quark, which
is a nice giant Quark. Wobbly.
That's giving out giant wobbly for giving away free drinks? No,
never.
I forgot about tiny wobblies and giant wobblies.
What did they do for him?
I know.
What did they do for him? It's always transactional with a Ferengi.
For sure.
Yeah, they must have done something. Well, he says it's because he's heard the treaty's going to be signed to celebrate. Bashir and Miles say, where did you hear it? He mentions Jem'Hadar officers. And then he's got a moment where he says, I have a dream. Quark says, I have a dream that all of us stand together. It's kind of like the Martin Luther King speech.
It is. It
like, was what the like hell?
You feel like you're going down that road. And then he says, standing beside all of my Dabo tables. So he kind of ruins it.
I think that was intentional for us to go. Yeah.
I mean, the reason why he gave the free drinks is not just because of the peace agreement, but more importantly, because the Jem'Hadar, he thinks, have the gene. When O'Brien asked what this gene
was,
the gambling gene.
After Quark's big I have a dream speech in the Dabo tables, a Jem'Hadar is walking by, bumps into O'Brien, but the Jem'Hadar blames O'Brien, which clearly he didn't do anything. They end up kind of having a few words. The Jem'Hadar grabs him, throws him over a bar, which I have to say the double was a bad double of Miles O'Brien.
Yeah, it was a bad double.
I didn't notice as much the first. When I watched it the second time, I could see that it wasn't him. The first time it happened so fast, I wasn't.
Really?
I didn't notice so much. Yeah. But
did you notice, Robbie?
That was brutal.
It was brutal, but he didn't throw him immediately. The first thing he does is he confronts him. Then he sort of takes Miles' face with his hand and shoves him on the ground.
Yeah.
Then he goes over and picks him up and throws him into the bar. But that whole grabbing him by the face and just shoving him onto the ground was so aggressive. It was like, ugh.
Very disrespectful.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So he got disrespected and thought that, oh, since I've been disrespected, I'm going to disrespect you. I don't know why I'm doing an accent right now, but that's
why not? Much you can.
That's the disrespected accent.
You know, old Jim Hadaw speak with a random.
I saw Eddington and I thought, you're an asshole, Eddington. How about that? I'm doing one too, so you don't feel so bad.
Thank you. I like that. I appreciate it. I appreciate you, Terrafair. All right.
All right, so Bashir goes over to help him by the bar. Eddington walks in. Eddington apologizes to the Jem'Hadar for this.
I was like, what is the Kool-Aid you are drinking? Because they're passing it out from that mean...
From the Admiral and now you. Everybody's like bowing down to the Jem'Hadar. Bashir is mad about this. Says they have to follow the station rules. Eddington's defending them. You know, just give them a little more time to adjust. I was like, seems like Eddington and the Admiral, they're on the other side, the bad guy side.
Eddington, give them some time to adjust in Terry's British accent.
I did feel scared for Bashir because when Bashir came over and tried to defend Miles, I didn't hear it. I didn't hear it. What'd you say?
She's just doing her editing.
I got nervous.
She was talking like Eddington.
I was talking like Eddington, and then I got nervous.
Then she got nervous.
It's a nervous. That is a nervous British dialect. Yeah. It's a, yeah.
Sorry. Cisco and Jake have dinner.
Let's leave this scene because it's making Terry very nervous. Okay, so we're at Cisco's quarters next, having some dinner. Cisco and Jake having dinner. Cisco is very preoccupied. He says he feels out of the loop with all of this, with this treaty and all this stuff going on. And Jake is wondering if something's going on. I think Jake was very wise here. It's like he felt like I felt like Jake in this moment. Like, come on, guys, something's going on here. What's happening?
Yeah, and then when his dad is just like, I got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Jake says, there's something going on, isn't there? And Cisco says, like, what? And Jake says, you tell me. Yeah. And to me, that's usually Cisco saying that to Jake.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Right.
Yeah.
You tell me.
Yeah.
As a parent would, right?
Yeah. Another tidbit from the writers to make us.
Yes.
Yeah, it does feel a little suspicious, like the way they're behaving.
Signals to us something's not quite right.
Yeah.
Dax shows up and says she's being transferred to the Lexington.
Dax is more than upset.
She is very upset.
Well,
she's angry.
She's confused. Upset, but not as upset as Cisco in the next scene, though.
Oh, my gosh.
I love this.
Yeah. Well, Dax is upset. She says she's being transferred. And then Bashir calls and says, I need to talk to you about the Jem'Hadar.
Right.
So we assume, Cisco's got the news about the transfers and now what the Jem'Hadar have done. And we cut into the guest quarters where Nechayev, the admiral, is. He comes in mad. I put with like 10 D's on it. Mad.
He came in guns a-firing. He was like
Cisco on fire.
Oh, wow.
Cisco on fire.
Isn't this the most passionate or loud that he's been in the entire series?
So far, I think so far. I've never seen him this angry.
Honestly, when we were watching the pilot and he lost his, and he was screaming, but that was pain. Yeah. This is anger. This is anger. You don't with my people.
Yeah.
He's mad about his crew being reassigned without his approval. He says he doesn't trust the Dominion. The Admiral says, he's the first to know this, but she's going to tell him some news that Starfleet is pulling out of DS9 and the entire sector. And that the Dominion's going to take over and be responsible for Bajor.
And even Cisco is going to be reassigned.
And Cisco just cannot believe all of this is happening. He wants to talk to the negotiators, the people, making this treaty. She says, sorry, it's too late. It's already been signed.
Yeah. And then I knew I was in a different reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Each scene just builds on the last, doesn't it? Yeah. Okay.
Off of that big news, we go back to Odo's planet. A bird, like a vulture or something, flies down and morphs into Odo. Mm. So he's been a bird. He talks about the thrilling feeling of flying. He's flapping his arms. Renee was just really reliving the sensory experience of flying like a bird. I thought it was really, really cool.
And we never see him do that before this.
No.
No, he seemed free. Like that experience helped free him up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kira asks if he's going to stay. It's very sad, this moment. He doesn't really say, yes, I'm staying, but he says it's been good to work with you.
Yeah.
That's Kira. Saying goodbye.
Yeah.
That's basically saying goodbye.
Yeah.
It's been great.
She says, okay, one more thing. Can you just help me figure out this power source in this door that she's found? And Odo's confused. He's like, wait a minute. Why would my people need a door?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I'm actually glad that they put another button on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Odo's going to help, it looks like. So they're going to go do that. We go to the Replimat next. Garak finds Sisko at the Replimat, thanks him for his command. Garak wants to say goodbye, says there's a rumor that the rumor is that Bajor has formed an alliance with the Romulans and they're going to go to war. Oh my God. This is escalating very quickly, this whole thing.
Yeah. And so help me understand this, that Bajor and the Romulans are going to go to war with the Federation and the Dominion?
Yeah. Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to stay for that.
No.
That doesn't sound like fun.
It does not sound like fun.
Because no. Garak
says phaser is definitely not big enough for that battle.
No. Yeah. Garak does say to Sisko, well, you'll be back. And that's when he says, what? Well, you'll be fighting against the Bajorans and the Romulans together.
I like the end of the scene though, because Garak in his typical way is kind of saying things without saying them explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
Garrick's sort of fishing at the end. He goes, you know, it's a shame we can't both go against the wishes of our superiors.
Right.
Sisko kind of smiles they're both thinking the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
They're on the same highway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Garak has already said to Sisko that I don't share the same feelings. Or he says, I share the same feelings that you have about this Dominion treaty. So he's already sowing those seeds of doubt in Sisko's mind to rebel or do something different, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, who would have thought that Garak and Sisko would be so close?
Yes.
And then Tarul starts running through the promenade. She's being chased by the Jem'Hadar.
Oh, yeah.
She calls for Sisko. He and Garak exit the Replimat, and just then the Jem'Hadar shoot her in the back, and she falls into Sisko's arms.
Yes.
He fights the Jem'Hadar, but is knocked out. Can you believe that?
No. It all felt like everything's escalating quickly. And poor.
She's
Martha
dead,
Hackett.
Too. She's dead.
Yeah,
she's dead.
DEAD dead.
Yes. And it's
no mince in that word.
No, but it's shocking. And if you don't know something is in the Twilight Zone yet, well, this is probably going to throw you into that for sure.
Yeah. And Sisko's trying to fight back, but he's fighting the Jem'Hadar hand to hand, and they're pretty rough.
They're big guys. And there was more than one.
Yeah. We go in the security office next. I think Dax, Bashir, and Garak want to see Sisko, who's been arrested, and Eddington's sitting at the desk. Eddington's like, nope. And I love how Garak kind of walks around and basically hyposprays him. He says, oh, I think you have a loose thread. He goes to reach over to Eddington's collar and instead hyposprays him unconscious.
He is the tailor.
Yeah,
I love that they added him to this whole sequence.
Yes. Dax runs off to get Sisko, who's being detained. Garak and Bashir drag Eddington's body, away. They all grab phasers. Dax tells Sisko that Miles is waiting with a runabout, that they've already loaded it with photon torpedoes. And Sisko's like, you know me well. she's arming it. She's doing exactly what Sisko would have done.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Eddington ends up in the cell that Sisko was in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dax tells Sisko, we've got all these torpedoes. I know what you would have done. We're prepared to go collapse the wormhole.
Yeah. Like what?
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
Collapsing the wormhole. And by the way, nobody mentions Kira and Odo they're not there. Kira and Odo are never on DS9. They're still lost somewhere.
So they would be trapped in the Gamma Quadrant.
Yeah, they don't even talk about them, which I found to be very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, in was it the last episode or the episode before where we talked about, like, yeah, collapsing the wormhole is not an option.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Give me another option.
Yeah.
So that was just like major alarm bells.
Yeah.
And we're all like, yeah, we're going to do it. We're heroes.
I like Andy Robinson's last line at the end of the scene where Garak says, oh, I wouldn't worry about that, doctor. And Dax says, that's easy for you to say. And Garak says, oh, you misunderstand me, Lieutenant. All I meant was it's a little foolish to worry about our careers at a time like this when there's a good chance that we're all about to be killed. I like Garak's...
his tone of voice,
right? Yeah, like it just, is, just, like, just matter of fact.
I gotta share my priorities, lady.
It was literally like he was telling you what he was going to order for lunch. It was there's just like, yeah, we're just going to be killed. You know, it's a very good chance.
Yeah. So nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Very funny.
I'm back on the planet surface, but not really the surface. Underneath the surface, we're in the cavern. Odo and Kira are there, and he feels like, yeah, there's something going on, because his feeling is that door's there, not to keep people out, but to keep whatever is on the other side in. So it's the bum, bum, bum moment. Kira asks if he can get it open. So he then does some morphing with his hand. And
he does some morphing. It looks like he's got three fingers
going
into like three holes. It was an odd lock system that he was unlocking.
Yes. But we jump from that. We don't actually see him opening up the door. Nope. We jump to the next scene. We're back on DS9. We're now in a corridor. We see Sisko is leading the gang, which is Bashir, Garak, and I think Dax too, right?
Yeah.
Dax is there as well. And two Jem'Hadar come around this corner. And at this point, Garak's very smart. He sort of pretends that he's the one that captured Sisko and Dax and Bashir. He's like, okay. This is the plan. I've got them. And the Jem'Hadar is like, what are you talking about? What plan? And he's like, oh, no one told you. And that's when he says, I pretend to be their friend and then I shoot you. And he shoots them both. But I would think the second guy would have already shot Garak after the first one got shot. You know, I mean, if they're Jem'Hadar, their reflexes are faster than that, I feel. Well, but
Garak,
he shoots
Garak was a tough guy in the Cardassian military.
He was. So maybe
talked about.
Yeah. Okay. Let's give him some credit. Mm-hmm. He's got skills.
He does have skills.
Yes. Yeah. But Sisko compliments him. He says, well done, Garak. Garak says something about he read it once in a book, acting like he's never had any military skills, right? Bashir jokes, yeah, I'm sure. And that's when he gets shot. Garak, that is. He gets shot. And it's so sad. Because the last thing he says is, doctor, I'm afraid I won't be able to have lunch with you today, which is a great ending line, but it makes you want to cry at that point to hear something like that. He dies. And Sisko's like, okay, like, we got to go. More Jem'Hadar are chasing after them. Dax shoots a couple of them.
Dax is on top of the you know, keeping everybody safe from the back end. You're firing at everybody.
I am.
You were on
top. Take no prisoners.
Of it. No.
You're hurting my people. You're out.
She's keeping everybody safe.
But, you know, it's funny because she goes, I've got the rear. But the next shot, when they're coming around the corridor, she's in the lead, okay, before they get to the airlock.
She's that good, Garrett.
She's that good.
She's that good. She can be in the back and the front.
I thought they were already past me. Because Sisko and the gang, because doesn't he say, Dax, hurry up, and then...
Yeah, they are past you. So you shoot a Jem'Hadar to help them. They're already past you, but in the next shot of you guys running into another part of the corridor, you come in first at that point. So you've passed everybody.
She's that good.
She's that good. But what I didn't like with the choice of that shot was the camera's on a dolly, and it's pulling back as you're running in, Dax, but because a dolly can't go at 100 miles an hour, it's limited. You had to limit your run. Exactly.
Yes.
Otherwise you'd run into the camera crew. So that, to me, I felt like the camera should have been set up at the end of the hallway just to show a full run coming in. So that's the only thing that kind of bugged me about that scene.
Yeah, it's always hard to do running shots with cameras that can't go as fast as people can run.
As the actor. Yeah.
Yeah. We had this thing on Turner and Hooch with the dog, where they'd always write these things about, the dog Hooch is chasing the bad guy. Right. Well, if you send a dog after a human, they will catch them in about 3 seconds. Like, there's no way that a dog can't run 10 times faster than even the stuntman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'd always have these shots where we'd send the bad guy and then we'd say, wait, don't let the dog go. And give him lots of space and then, okay, send the dog. And the dog's like, right on top of that person.
Totally.
I don't know, like, how fast is the average dog?
Yeah. But you They're noticed, Terry, fast. you saw the awkward kind of, you know, slow run is what I call it, like to make it.
Yeah, fake, it was like kind of a dance run.
It was a dance run. But ooh, again, you can't go any further. Because
like I was on my tippy toes. I couldn't. Well, also, I'm 6 feet tall. So,
yes.
And I'm not a great basketball player. I was a better runner.
Right.
No, but, not your fault. Not your fault at all. They made you do something awkward and unreal.
Yeah.
Everyone would have done the same awkward run dance thing. And I'm just saying, I would have let you, if I was directing this episode, I would have let you run because you have athletic ability. So it would have been cool.
Okay. So next we're on the runabout. Our heroes seem to have escaped, except for Garrick, who's dead.
And Tyrul.
And Tyrul. Yeah. They're dropping like flies now.
They are.
This is not looking good. In the runabout, they head towards the wormhole. Miles does ask about Garrick in this when they first come in, because Miles thought, you know, where's Garrick? Wasn't he supposed to be with you?
Yeah.
And Bashir just says he's not coming, and that was very sad to me.
It is sad because O'Brien understood that immediately, didn't he? Yeah. He says, "Oh, I see. Okay, so he's yeah."
Without saying he's dead, it was very nicely played.
I agree.
Yeah, but they're on a mission too, so there's no time to get fuzzy about it.
Mm-mm. Nope. It would be a tiny wobbly if they got fuzzy about it.
He's bringing it back.
I love tiny wobbly. I forgot wobbly. About that. The Terry Farrell expression. I love it. They're heading there. This is when the Admiral Nechayev calls with Borath, and she tells Sisko to stand down to return back to DS9. Borath says he's going to send the Jem'Hadar. I love when Sisko goes, yeah, fine, send him. Because he's going to stop them from getting, just make sure you tell them they're not getting any reinforcements because I'm closing the wormhole.
No, he says
for about 16 years.
For about 70 years.
70 years. Oh, 70 years. 70.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that little exchange.
That's a good way of saying it.
Yeah.
70 years.
Yeah.
That's a nice span of peace.
Well, they do blow up the wormhole.
Yeah.
It works. Three torpedoes go inside. Kaboom, kaboom, kaboom. Big explosion. No more wormhole. This does not seem good for the series, I'm just saying at this point.
No, but look at that number, because that's kind of like they handed the relay baton to Voyager, because we are trapped 70 years. It'll take us 70 years to get back.
Oh, interesting.
They use that same number.
So. Interesting.
Interesting. More connections.
Mm-hmm. And then we smash cut back down to Odo's planet.
Yeah.
Where Odo, in his fabulous changeling hand, is opening up the door. Mm-hmm. And he says to Kira to step back. Did you guys notice that she did not step back?
Oh, I didn't know.
No, I didn't notice.
She did not. She's like,
such a rebel. Forward? Maybe she doesn't understand back and forward.
Did you think I was a girl? No, I'm a woman.
I'm standing.
So she opened it with those two Jem'Hadar standing there. I just thought,
yeah,
what? Uh-oh. No, yeah.
What is happening?
What the heck?
They drag him down some tunnel into the classic Star Trek caves. Yeah. The cave set that we all know and love.
Stage 18.
Yeah, they head down the tunnel. We cut back to the interrogation room, where I guess this is where all the Defiant crew, so Sisko, the real Sisko. This is the cave. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Behind the Jem'Hadar, there's this room that looks like some kind of laboratory. And we're all laying on these boards, basically, like little.
It didn't look comfortable.
No.
It looked like your heads were all kind of pointed upwards, too, which made me uncomfortable.
They used to have these cheat boards in Hollywood. We used a couple when we were doing some scenes for Paper Dolls. Mm-hmm. And we were at MGM. And they had all of these old, basically a long plank, or if you would, like a massage table, an ironing board, that style, only at an angle. So when the actresses were wearing dresses, to not wrinkle the dress, but for the actress to have a rest, she could stand on this, and there was a little place for your feet, and you leaned back, and so it was sort of like laying down,
but it's a little rest for your head.
Yeah, you didn't wrinkle your dress.
Oh my gosh!
But those things, I remember during filming, those things reminding me of that. So it wasn't awful.
It was, yeah.
All things considered.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you could have taken a nap or something there.
It would have been harder to stand there
yes.
and be still with our eyes closed.
Yeah.
Because that's hard to do.
Well, it seeing,
looked creepy.
Yeah. Seeing it, the crew yeah. like that, Robbie, reminded me of a couple of things. The Voyager episode, The Thaw, with Michael McKean as the embodiment of fear, and Harry Kim and B'Elanna Torres are in these, basically these chambers that are unconscious, very similar to how the DS9 actors mm-hmm. are here, and everything was a psychological projection, which is exactly what mm-hmm. is going on here. Mm-hmm. And then this whole scene then reminded me, Robbie, of our pilot episode, another yeah. sort of DS9 baton handing off to Voyager in a way where all the Voyager actors are on those bio beds from the caretaker yeah. unconscious. And this is very similar. So I almost
didn't
felt
they
like
have like a, the needles,
the needle that came into
our
us.
Head.
Yeah, yes. They came into our chest cavity is what that yeah, was. That's not
did
our
Michael heads. McKean play a bad guy?
Michael McKean kind of played, yes, he did, but not in our
He's
pilot
so
episode
talented.
Later. He's really,
so
really good.
Yeah. Was he nice?
Yeah.
I thought he was super nice.
He was really nice. I did work with him. He was great. He was and very, you know, he thought outside the box, and some of the things, suggestions that he made were used as well in the episode. So
wow.
I respected his work for sure. But I will say that seeing everyone like that reminded me of our pilot episode. So I almost felt like, and again, me wearing white, this is like a rebirth. It's almost like season one and two were just, they were just
were
rehearsal.
Reborn.
And then this is the beginning of DS9. Dun, dun, dun,
yes.
You know, so that's where I'm going with that one.
Well,
perfect.
It's a terrifying moment to see our crew all in these experimental tables. And Borath is explaining that they experimented with this crew, you know, put them on these beds. They wanted to track their thoughts, I guess, and see how they responded to a Dominion takeover.
Right.
And they learned that they would resist. Mm-hmm. And that's when the female enters the scene, the female changeling. She admits that they are the founders. Changelings are the founders.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. My head exploded.
Yes. And I was like, yes, okay, that's why I thought that was kind of crazy.
It's all making sense, yes. She admits the changeling of the founders. And she says something like, it's ironic that we were hunted for so long and now we control the destinies of hundreds of species. I thought that was interesting.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
A little creepy.
Upsetting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She says, what we control can't harm us. And this is where,
the thought process is faulty because they were the ones hunted and now they are doing the death and destruction, or at least they're not doing it personally, but they use the Gem Hadar to do that. Yeah. So they're doing exactly the same thing they
that
had
done
to themselves. Yeah.
It's a classic.
Which also is like, no, they're not on their planet having this peaceful, quiet, safe place. They're hiding because they're bad guys.
Yeah. It's like the reverse golden rule. The golden rule is you want people to do unto you what you hope. What's the
do unto others as you would have done unto you.
Yes.
You'll have to work on that one.
Thank you. Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. But they're reversing it. They're sort of like, you know, whatever was done to you in aggression, you do to someone else. So that's
all the bad shit that was done to you, do that to other people.
Do that to other people. Let them experience it.
I think that's revenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's called
very vengeful attitude. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, yes, the female does say to Odo, well, when Odo says, I am not one of you, that I've actually become one of my family, this chosen family in a way, is basically what he's saying. And he wants to return with them, with the crew. He wants to go back to DS9. And the female does admit here, she said, a changeling is never, you know, harmed another changeling or stood in their way. And she allows it.
Yep.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But she does threaten at the end, right? There's a little bit of that veiled threat. It's like, next time we won't be as, you know, accommodating
that's
or something
right.
like that.
That's right. Yeah. Next time, I promise you, we will not be so generous.
So generous, yeah.
Yes.
Wow. It sounded like a mother, a very manipulative mother when she
mother.
Said,
oh, yeah.
Yes.
You know, that we will miss you, but not as much as you're going to miss us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that was so manipulative and mean.
Yeah.
But they're the founders and they're the Dominion, right?
Yes.
I hope you'll return to us, Odo, and take your rightful place within the Dominion. So this is a lot of
new stuff. A lot of like politics to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious about the next or this season period, season three, to find out exactly what's what.
Yeah.
Because it sounds complicated.
Yeah. Odo tells Sisko that, you know, that they should head back and he'll explain everything later. He wants to stay for a minute. And then he has a final scene with the on the planet's surface with the female, that where she says, you know, that he's going to miss
this
them.
One where they had the full body goo?
That was earlier, I think.
That was earlier. I thought that was here.
Yeah, this is this scene is what you said earlier, which is we will miss you, but Odo, you will miss us even more. That's even more. But she does turn into goo when she goes back into the ocean of the lake of goo, right?
Right.
But he doesn't goo with her.
He doesn't goo with her. Oh, I got my goos mixed up.
Yeah. That's okay.
He looks very sadly towards her when she goos into the pond.
Yeah.
He's got a very sad sort of look. And
he
then
does.
Kira arrives.
Disappointed.
Do you remember when Kira sort of, he's looking down and she arrives over his shoulder?
Over his shoulder, yeah.
Yeah. And she presses his comm badge.
Yeah. It's very sweet.
Very sweet.
Taking care of him.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, themes, morals, and lessons from this episode.
Yes,
I'll start with mine.
Okay.
My lesson was that sometimes your chosen family can feel more like home than your biological family. That was my lesson. I kind of got that from Odo's story.
And that was my poem, too.
I like that because even in that last scene, he talks about, you know, your great link sounds great and all, and I felt a little bit of that, but I already have a link to this group of people. So. Yeah, that's your thing.
Yeah.
Terry?
Terry,
I wrote,
your
grass is not greener on the other side.
Nice.
You know, like because it is, or like, don't judge a book by its cover. It's like, oh, you're home. You're going to be amazing.
Yeah, this will make me happy. Yeah.
It has its own issues.
Mm. What about you, Karen?
Mine is just, you have to be careful of power corrupting, because power does corrupt. And that's exactly what happened with the founders or the changelings. Once they got the power, then they would do anything to keep that power. And that includes persecution, death, and all the things that they had to experience when they were being the hunted. So power corrupts.
I have a question. How do these changelings have all this power? It just occurred to me. They have no weapons. They have no nothing. Like, why do the Jem'Hadar and the Vorta and everybody, why do they bow down to the changelings?
I feel like we're going to get those answers coming up. They'll happen at some point. Yes? Okay.
But I want to say, to your point about the power and the corruption, that I think that the people who get power and don't handle it well, we're always having a deficit in empathy and understanding for other people, because there are people that have great wealth and great power that are benevolent and they handle it really well. And then, you know, the same thing is true for people who have been treated really poorly. Some people turn into, you know, on the narcissistic spectrum, treat other people really poorly. And other people have had really shitty stuff happen to them. And they might be insecure, maybe more needy, and have to work on their self-confidence and their self-esteem. So people come in how they come in. And then whatever happens to you, you know, gaining the power, it has to do with who you are to begin with.
It does,
the
but
power just really reveals who you really are.
Yeah, but in my estimation, I do feel like the people that are super powerful and benevolent are in the minority. There are more people that are powerful that are not able to handle that power.
And do you think
well.
It's because they're afraid they're going to lose it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I think that is what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that fear of losing the power they worked so hard to get.
Fear is a bad thing.
So they try to control it.
Yeah. I think Terry has the Patreon poll winner of the
lesson/
moral winner.
I'm so excited.
Good doggy.
Our Patreon poll winner for the theme moral of this episode is submitted by Alex Ray. What you find at the end of the journey may not be what you wanted.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. There's no place like home.
Yeah.
You could say that. Yeah.
Like it was there all along, and home, all these things you think you wanted. Yeah. May not be what you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thank you for tuning in and listening to our recap and discussion of The Search, Part 2. Join us next time when we will be reviewing, recapping, and discussing the episode The House of Quark with none other than Armin Shimmerman. Yes. But thank you again to Terry for joining us for this episode. Thank you, Terry.
Pleasure is mine.
Of course. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Everyone else, have a great day.